Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a very special guest for us today. Mr. Alan Slay is joining us from the American Kennel Club. Alan is the Director of Event Operations, correct, Alan?
Event programs, but essentially the
event
same,
programs.
Yes.
Okay, very good. And we're coming up onto May when the point schedule changes every year. We all wait for it to see whether we're going to get more or less, or how are our majors going to work, and everybody's all excited. And sometimes there's confusion about how that works and why things go the way they do. So Alan is here to help us understand that, and I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Excellent. Okay, so as I was mentioning, point schedules, divisions, all of this is very intense interest, right, to those of us that are showing our dogs. And we're always looking for, you know, the best advantage or the, right, where can I go to find that major? How does this work? So can you give us some of the sort of critical infrastructure that makes this happen? You're the guy that does this. This is your baby, if you will, right?
I'm responsible for it. Yeah, I work closely each year with our technology team, the AKC Technology Services, ATS. And so there are really two components here. There's the one is that each year we formulate the point schedule for the following year. And then traditionally, about every 5 years, we do an analysis of the composition of the divisions to try to make sure that we have a fair and balanced division of states across the different divisions. And it just so happens this year was one of the years. We'd last done it, and the point schedule was released in 2012.
Right.
And this year we did that realignment. So I'll take you through each of those.
That would be amazing.
The overall process, and then we can discuss more details in each one of them if you would like, because I want to make sure everybody understands how it works.
So. I think it's wonderful. And listeners, just a note, I am still a dog breeder here at Pure Dog Talk, and that is a bitty baby puppy you might hear in the background, so forgive us. So go ahead, Alan. I really think this is important for people to understand.
Sure. So let's talk about the point schedule we do every year.
Yes.
And that is our clock for formulating that starts somewhere about mid-January, because that is the time when we will have processed all the confirmation events, their results from the previous year. So one thing I want to point out is that while our point schedule begins usually in May, we start it somewhere around the second or third week of May. We try to pick a date where there are no or few events so
right.
that for a string there that the point schedule is consistent for the string of events occurring at a site.
Perfect.
The point schedule itself is based off the competition that was held in the previous calendar year. And I want to emphasize that is the competition, because there's some misconceptions out there that we base it off of the total number of entries or the total number of shows where a breed could compete or is a registration. None of that is true. It is based purely off of the dogs that competed within a division, a breed, and a sex the previous year. So that's what goes into the process for determining that point schedule.
Okay.
So sometime around the second week of January, once we process the results, what we'll do is I'll work with the technology services, and we have some software programs that have been programmed to reflect the guidelines that have been set by the board of directors as to how to set the points, the number of competitors required at the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 point level. And for a refresher for folks.
Right, because I think this is new to a lot of people. So if we can just kind of break that down just a little bit.
I will, and I'll say that preparing for the talk, I've been with the AKC since 1996. So in my 20 years, this has always been the same. And I did a little research trying to find out, you know, when this go into effect. As far back as we could find, 1971, and it was in effect then. So,
wow.
You know, it's been in effect for a long time. So there's nothing new as
right.
far as the percentages at each of the point levels.
But what I'm saying is I don't think people understand that those percentages exist, right? Like, I've been in this sport my entire life and I didn't know this. So I think this is, I want to kind of put a big bold star around this, listeners, because this is good information.
Sure. So in each division, I'm going to read right off some information. So our website, I think you're going to include as part of the information that you'll provide associated with the link to this, this discussion.
Yep.
I'm going to read it just right off of it because I think that's the clearest and easy way to do that.
Okay.
And that is, for 1 point, 95% of the shows where there was competition carry one or more points for Dogs and Bitches. So that's, you know, each one of these is done separately, you know, each division, breed, and sex.
Which, can I just say, that's a lot of dogs. And that's a lot of work. I mean, you're talking about 190 breeds, 50 states, 14 divisions, and you have to do this for every single one. I just think it's crazy.
That's why I was saying the software program actually has this information and puts out our first cut of this before we then do some fine-tuning to try to make sure that we benefit the exhibitors all that we can.
Good, good.
And the way the software works, it figures out the 1 point, the 3 points. 3 points is as close as possible to 18%, but should not exceed 20% of the shows in a division are to carry major points. That's 3, 4, or 5.
Right.
And the majors created by best of winners, best of breed, best of opposite are not counted on this calculation and are affect bonus majors over and above the 18%. So the software will determine the 1%, the 1 point threshold for competitors, the 3 point threshold, and then the 2 point is set at half the difference between the 1 and 3 point breaks.
Okay.
Then the software will then to calculate the 5 point, the number of competitors required for 5 points, and that's as close as possible to 2% of the shows are to carry 5 points. And then the way we get the 4 point is to get the set at 2/3 of the difference between the 3 and 5 point break. So a software program goes and looks at, for each, like I said, division, breed, and sex, it looks at for each of those. Mm. So you're talking about, like you said, it's for each breed, the 15 division, each of the sexes. So you do that math, that's a lot of looking.
Right.
It individually looks at the shows that had competitors, and then it sorts them and then uses those guidelines set by the board of directors to determine what the number of competitors should be required for each of those, the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 points.
Right.
Now, one thing I want to point out is that when it's looking at those shows, and I'll call them candidate shows, that's what I refer to them. Those are shows that are candidates to be included in the point schedule formulation process. Once again, there had to be competition. And this is only regular classes. If I had 3 entries in the regular classes and they were all absent, that show itself is not counted in the competition. Or if there were no entries. So that's an important aspect there.
And I think it's important to note, because I read this in some of your material, national specialties and regional specialties associated with nationals don't bump your point schedule up. Is that a correct statement?
It's actually beyond that. Let me read that. I'd like to extrapolate a little bit on that.
But that'd be great.
Let me read here off the website, and then I'll go a little bit further, because it's even further than what you just said there.
Mm-hmm.
Competitions offered by parent clubs are not included in the point schedule. So anything offered by the parent club doesn't count.
Automatically. Okay.
And that includes independent specialties as well as designated specialties.
Wow. Okay.
And this is the part that you were speaking of, breed competition. Now, notice I said breed competition, and I'll loop back around to that.
Mm-hmm.
Held by any club, an all-breed group or specialty, within plus or minus 3 days and 50 miles of the breed's parent club national specialty, are excluded from the formulation. Myself and others working on this saw some disparity of almost a penalty for allowing a national specialty to come into your division the way the formulation used to work.
Right.
About 4 years ago, we went to the board of directors and said, this is just not fair. For instance, you'd have a national specialty occurring on a Thursday, maybe a Wednesday and a Thursday, and you'd have a cluster over the weekend at the same site on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Well, that Friday and Saturday, Sunday for that breed would have an inflated number of competitors compared to what it would normally have. And those all breed or other specialties were counting toward the point schedule. And so that was almost a penalty for bringing in the national into your division.
Yes.
So we looked at that. We didn't think that was fair to the exhibitor. And we successfully, the board of directors completely agreed. So now we exclude any competition. It doesn't matter if it's held by a local club especially Aubrey Group, a designated, doesn't matter, any competition within plus or minus 3 days and 50 miles of the national does not count. That also helped with things like Montgomery, where there's a lot of nationals held up there.
Right.
So it took those out of the equation. So actually, there are more majors being handed out than just the percentages there. And the last thing I'll say is that any events held in conjunction with the AKC National Championship are excluded. So all the lead-up events, which is occurring currently in Orlando, any of those lead-up events are excluded because, once again, that would inflate the point schedule, make it more difficult for the rest of that division.
Yeah, so, Florida would be in a world of hurt.
Yeah. So the one thing I do want to point out is one thing when you mentioned a regional specialty.
Right.
Is there is some misconception out there that we don't count regional specialties. Well, maybe, maybe not. Once again, let's go back to what the board has agreed to there for their guidelines. If that regional specialty is held by the parent club, absolutely, it is not included in the point schedule formulation.
Okay.
If that regional specialty is held by any club, a local club or a regional club, however the parent club defines it, within plus or minus 3 days or 50 miles of their national specialty, and you only get one national specialty a year, and you know some breeds have a national specialty than a roving. Well, they pick which one they want to consider to be their one national per year, and that's what we use.
Okay.
So any one between plus or minus 3 days and 50 miles, that's not included.
Okay.
However, if there's a regional specialty, you know, not within plus or minus 3 days and 50 miles of the national, and it's not held by the parent club, those are included
right.
in the point schedule formulation.
Right. Okay. So I'm just thinking of, for example, this is, and I'm trying to help the listeners understand this, and you can clarify if I'm wrong. For example, say the Spinoni Club of America doesn't have independent local clubs, and so their parent club hosts regional specialties around different parts of the country. And those are not nationals, so those do count for those parts of the country for their point schedules. Is that accurate?
Not if it's held by the parent club.
Okay.
If it's held under the parent club's name, no event held under the parent club's name counts toward the point schedule formulation.
Good. Okay, so that's clear. Nice. Very good. Okay. So now we've got a handle on that, and I think it's important for exhibitors to understand that 95% of the shows are going to have 1 point, and 18% of the shows in a division are going to have a 3 point or a major, and only 2% of them are supposed to have a 5 point major. Is that, I'm just bare bones?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And the software program will then use that algorithm and give us a file of the proposed point schedule. And then this used to be done manually. And it's not anymore.
I bet you're happy about that, Alan.
Yeah, I am, because you get some blurry eyes looking over. You know, you get to about that 12th division, and, you know, you want to treat everybody fairly. But it used to be about a two-day deal with the door closed.
Yeah.
So we've written a series of database queries that will show us some anomalies. For instance, depending on the way competition was held, sometimes the software will put something out that will say something like two competitors for 1 point, four for 2 points, and four for 3 points.
Mm.
Well, you can't have a duplicate
right.
there, so we'll go and have that adjusted to make that 2 points down to three. So we run a series of queries to do that and a few other things, and we're running it through there to try to make sure we are as fair as we can be to the exhibitor, because up until 2012, there used to be, the other thing I want to emphasize here about that point schedule formulation is it's right now, and since 2012, it has been based off just the previous calendar year. It used to be, prior to 2012, a rolling 3 year.
Right.
And we saw that having problems because what was happening is once again, if you had a large event come through your area, like a roving specialty, a large, you know, just a large event, you were kind of penalized for 3 years there, you know, because it was the average across that. Well, that's not how it is anymore. It's only off the previous year. And also in there were some, we have some governors where we try to not have any division or any division breed sex go up by more than a certain percentage in a given year. So even if there's something coming in there, we try to soften that a little bit. And that's been, you know, we discussed that with the board.
Okay.
We try to make sure it's a fair and balanced point schedule, but adhering to what the guidelines and what the board has directed us to do, we have to do that. That is our job.
Mm-hmm.
to implement and support the board policy.
Well, and I think, too, part of this is, you know, everybody wants to finish their dog and they want to, and I know this is outside your purview, but for me, it's like, well, just because you got a major that, you know what I'm saying, the cheap major thing, I think is something that we talk about in the sport as exhibitors. And I think it's good to know that the American Kennel Club is aiming to make sure that, you know, a show championship means something, right? That's what these points are designed to do.
And they adjust. We've seen, for the most part, we've seen, and it's not across the board, but for the most part, the number of competitors has dropped through the number of years as the number of competitors has dropped. So the point schedule is actually doing its job, whether it's going up or down, because it's reflecting what is happening in the sport.
Right.
And trying to reflect that so that it is as fair as it can be to the exhibitors.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay, so now talk to us about divisions. Now, this division change that is happening this year, and it's going to start in about a month, this is a new one, and I was looking at it and thinking, well, that's kind of, So take us through that. How does that work for us?
Well, this started for us, I'll just speak to this particular one.
Mm-hmm.
This one started in about June of 2017. We started doing the analysis on the divisions.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, one of the key things that makes up the division is geography.
Right.
I mean, that's just very obvious. We're going to try to keep it so geography matters. You know, other than a single state division, a state should always have a shared border with at least one other state in the division. When we look at the divisions and the makeup, we're looking at the number of all breed shows. We don't take into account, because as the specialties come and go more between, you know, as a macro level, we're looking at the analysis on the distribution. We're looking at all breed shows. And we look at the number of shows, the total entry, the average entry, and the standard deviation. And I will say that the average entry is the key component there. We want it to be consistent as possible, because with this many variations of divisions of breeds and sexes across the nation and the pockets of breeders, and especially breeds that are not as popular as some others from a showing point of view or breeding point of view, there's going to be anomalies. And so we have to really step back from a macro point of view and look at this and try to say, well, if we've got as much as we can, the similar size shows across the division, it will trickle down and be as fair as it can be. So we spent a lot of time looking at that. I got to do a lot of work in Excel and a lot of queries against the database.
I bet you did.
Looking at trends to try to make it more fair and balanced and see what's changed in the sport in the last 5 years, in this case 6 years, since the divisions were last realigned. And there were some things that jumped out at us, and then there's some things that data brought to our attention. Of course, during that whole time, exhibitors provide their feedback of some of the changes they would like to have in the divisions, and we took those all into account as well, you know, as part of that.
Right. I'd like it if you could talk to that a little bit more, and I know that maybe you guys don't really necessarily want everybody yelling at you, but I think it's important that people understand that there is a method in which, if you have a particular observation, that you can voice that opinion to the American Kennel Club. So can you give us just a little snippet of how that would work?
I'll use a couple here. One of them is that Arizona was included with California in the last realignment. Before that, California had always been its own division.
Right.
I wasn't part of that formulation process, and I'm sure there's a reason for that. But the more we looked at it, it was causing a lot of problems for a lot of breeds for both Californians and Arizonians with that alignment. So it made sense to once again have California on its own and then move Arizona to another division. Now, this is where I will say we struggled the most in the realignment.
It was the one that caught my attention, so I'm interested to hear how this went.
And it's because of the distribution of, remember, once again, I said we want to try to have an even number of shows across a division.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the issues we have there, and this is an odd-looking division we created with Arizona and Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
It looks really odd. But if you look at that, there's a big difference between the exhibitors and the number of shows and the numbers between, you know, if you look at it, it'd be nice to make a little square there. It says, oh, we're going to make a division out of Utah, Colorado, Arizona, New Mexico.
Right.
Well, that is not fair to Utah and New Mexico.
Right.
You know, they do not have that, what I'll call an exhibitor pattern, and that really takes into account you know, the size of the Albury shows, which once again is a basis for this.
Got it.
You know, Utah and New Mexico, are the people who live in those states would be greatly affected by the competitors in Arizona and Colorado. And that's an odd-looking division with Colorado and Arizona. But it's the fairest thing we could do because, as we did, Utah and New Mexico really belongs in that division with Nebraska and New Mexico and Nevada and South Dakota. They have the similar size shows. And so that's an example of one that was the one we had the most difficulty
with. You know, that makes so much more sense. You know, living out here on the West Coast and all my West Coast people, and we all drive all over ridiculous distances, you know.
Yeah.
But that explanation makes so much more sense, and it is absolutely on target based on what I personally know of the dog shows in Colorado and Arizona, much more active, more number of shows, bigger shows versus New Mexico and Utah. That makes perfect sense to me now.
Yeah, because, you know, the easy thing for us to do would be just pretty much lay a grid and say, okay, well, we're just going to group all these together. But that would not be fair to the exhibitors.
Right.
And I'll bring another one to your attention. And one is we moved Tennessee. And we moved them into a division with Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi. They not only fit geographically, but once again, the average size of their shows fit much better than the shows that were in Maryland, North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, and D.C. overall. That made a lot of sense to do that based off of, you know, looking at the shows. That's an example of some of the things we looked at when doing this. So we started that in June or July, and we finished it all up with approval of the board of directors. I believe it was in the October time frame, October, November. So I will say that this last analysis of the division composition was the most complete and thorough that I know of being done here at the AKC in the over 20 years I've been here.
Okay.
And once again, we put that effort in because we want it to be as fair as we can to the exhibitors.
Right. And so I want to loop back a minute to what we were talking about before. If someone notices something that slipped through the cracks in their particular breed, in their particular division, in terms of, wow, it seems like we really shouldn't have to have 15 Clumber Spaniels to make a major here in Oregon, you know, something like that. Is there a process? Is there a thing that someone could do, that they could bring this to somebody's attention? How does that particular, I think communication sometimes is one of the areas between exhibitors and the American Kennel Club that gets a little lost. So how do we do that?
Sure. Well, it all comes to me to start with. So I will provide you my email address here, and then I'll let you provide it on the link, and that's ALS@AKC.org.
Excellent. You're a brave man, Alan.
Well, no, the thing is that we do review it. We do review each one of them. Every time somebody brings something to me, I have the queries that I can run and do the analysis. And I show people, and I will tell you, there are two things that usually happen. And that is that you'll have somebody, it usually revolves around breeds in which there's not a whole lot of events where the breeds are shown throughout the year in a division.
Right.
So each division, you're going to have somewhere between about 60 and 180 opportunities to exhibit your dog.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have some situations where you'll have a breed that out of that 80 to 160, that there's only 10 events in that whole division for that year of which there are any competitors.
Yeah, I see that in my breed actually pretty regularly.
Right. And so if we were just talking about Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Division 14, if those 10 events, you know, and out of those 10 events, there may be only be three or four, there's more than one or two competitors.
Mm-hmm.
If all those are happening in this case in Louisiana, and you live 300 miles away and you're busy that weekend, that may have been the only chance at your major in your division. Now, that doesn't mean you can't cross to another division, but it usually revolves around the smaller breeds, and we try to take a close look at that. And then you'll have the situation where you have the even more popular breeds. I've received several phone calls this year of some of these more popular breeds, and they'll say, there's no way we should have went up by three or four competitors. There's no way. And so then I'll run my query while they're on the phone usually, or I'll get back with them. I'll say, here it is.
Okay.
I'll use an example. You had 100 shows last year of which there were competitors. There were this number at 18 of them.
Mm-hmm.
This number or more, you know, there's 15 competitors more, 18 of them.
Mm-hmm.
18 divided by 100 is 18%. And then I'll list off the shows to the exhibitor, yeah. And I'll go, oh, well, that's because that big cluster, that big cluster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they count, they count. There's nothing
right.
I can do about that.
Right.
But yeah, I'm just transparent in that. That's the good thing is going through this process, I feel very comfortable
right.
that we are correctly implementing the board policy. Now, somebody may disagree of the board policy and those percentages,
right.
but I feel very comfortable that our system is doing the right thing as far as implementing that board policy.
Well, I think it's really important that people understand there is a human. It's not voodoo magic. It's, you know, there's no, you know, eye of Newt and tail of frog here. This is, you know, science-y. So.
No, we don't take this lightly at all. I mean,
no.
I'm the one that does talk to those exhibitors.
Right.
And it provides even a greater appreciation and understanding of the love they have for the sport, of all the things that they give up to participate in the sport, and how sometimes it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. You know, like to get majors, I will say that one thing that's going to surprise some people, like, you know, people say it's harder than ever to get majors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a matter of perspective. But unfortunately, because of the decrease in the number of competitors, and it's somewhat driven by when you have new breeds come in, they all almost always come in at the minimum,
mm-hmm.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
mm-hmm.
you know, for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points. With this new point schedule, 79% of the division breed sex combinations are at the minimum.
Wow.
They cannot go any lower. They are at the
right.
minimum of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
79%. Wow.
79%. 10 years ago, that was at 51%, about
right.
half.
Right.
So for 79% of the overall situations, you're at the minimum.
Right.
You've got to defeat.
That's actually kind of an incredible number that I had not heard before, Alan. That is interesting.
So from a macro view, it's easier than ever to get
mm-hmm.
majors. For the person, like I talked about, who has that breed where only 10 are going to show up, and there's really only going to be a major because those smaller breeds, too, are also very effectively using their communication networks and or social media to say, hey, we're going to get together and we're all going to go to these events this
yep.
year. You know, that may be their only chance. And so for those people, it is hard, you know, and it is as hard or harder than ever. And they're doing whatever they can to stay in the sport. And I get even a greater appreciation when reviewing the point schedule with those people who have questions about it.
Excellent. Well, Alan, I really, really appreciate your time and your insight and your thoughtfulness on this. And I will make sure, listeners, that you have the information. If you will have some charts and we'll have some contact information. So I think this has been a really good opportunity for people to really kind of dial into how this happens and that it isn't voodoo magic. So I appreciate that a lot, Alan.
Right, thank you for giving me the opportunity.
All right, crew, we are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy, and she has her tip of the week for us. Welcome, Allison.
Hi, Laura. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Excellent. So tell us, what is today's tip?
So we were at Poodle Club of America, and somebody said, I have a tip of the week for you. And I said, okay.
Awesome.
And it was, how about explaining some of the tips and tricks you use to get a dog over something that they hate? So something that you have to do to them all the time, grooming, bathing, nails, or something. And how do you get them through it or over it so it's not always such a hate relationship?
I like it.
Right. So I thought, wow, that's an awesome one. So I thought that I'm probably going to do two or three of these, but I'm going to start with the obvious one, which is toenails, because so many people have dogs or they come to me and they say, my dog just hates getting its nails clipped, or it's like such a struggle to get their nails clipped. So here you go. So I was born and raised with Afghan hounds, and
yes.
we all know, or if you don't, Afghans are notorious for hating their feet being touched, never mind their nails being done.
Right.
And so one of the first things that I was taught, and something that I always, always remember, is first of all, it's like when you go to the dentist and you're getting some dental work done and it requires freezing, right? So the dentist says, like, this is going to pinch, but they don't really show you that needle, like, coming down onto your face, right?
Right?
And if they do, like, it's really, really scary. You never see the needle, right? They just, a little bit of pressure. They try to distract you by maybe like pinching your cheek or shaking your lip or something. And I use that approach for toenails. So my dogs never see the toenail clippers or the grinder coming, really. And, you know, if it's a dog that actually has a hairy foot, like an Afghan or a Havanese or a Shih Tzu or something like that, because first of all, I'm not really going to grind those nails.
Right.
So what I do is I keep the toenail clippers beside me. And when I'm drying their foot, I just do the toenails on that foot. Because first of all, the blow dryer is pushing all the hair away from the toenail. And I can get in there easier with the nail clippers without the hair getting in the way. And, you know, you're done three nails before they really realize what you're doing. You do the fourth and then maybe they're getting upset. But now you just dry them for another 15, 20 minutes till you get to the next foot. Right?
I like that.
I've always done that. And, you know, I've had people watch me do it like at a show or something. They'll be like, oh, that makes life so much easier. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It does. Like in so many ways. Right.
Right.
And so I will use the same approach for other breeds, right? Like instead of making it a big deal that right before I start grooming them, I do their nails, or at the very end of grooming them, I do their nails. I just kind of do it as I go along, right? So if I'm drying a foot, like even on a Springer or a poodle, especially if it's a dog I know that anticipates it and gets upset about it, I'll just do the nails then. And again, a lot of times, especially you start by holding the front foot behind the dog, not out in front of
yes.
the dog. And a lot of times they don't see it. And again, it's like the third or fourth nail before they even realize what you're doing. And I find that that really, really helps. So I guess my summary of that is don't anticipate it, because dogs don't want to let us down.
Right.
So if we come at them, you know, like, okay, now it's time to do your nails, right? And this is going to hurt, kind of like the dentist saying, okay, I'm going to put this big needle in your face, then it's going to hurt twice as much because we're thinking about it.
Right.
It's like when somebody rips the Band-Aid off, just get it over quickly.
Yep.
So try to do it in a manner that the dog isn't anticipating it, and you're maybe not doing all 16 plus nails at once, right? Maybe
yes.
you're just doing four, and then 20 minutes of relaxing grooming time, and then four more nails. So that's my tip of the week this week.
I like it. I like it. I use a similar method. I always start with the back feet. Right? Because for whatever reason, is it, you know, like the blinders on the horse, they can't see you coming. It's not as dramatic, right? So that's a good one. Thank you so much, Allison. And listeners, don't forget your Pure Dog Talk 25. When you check out of one of your leading edge dog show academy courses, gives you a 25% discount. And you can have a cup of coffee on Allison and I. How's that?
Sounds great to me.
Excellent. Thanks, Allison.
No problem.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.